Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com. /PGAN, that's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, and you can also send email messages to the show at goforit.gan@gmail.com, and also, you can make sure you follow this show, this great show, on Twitter at goforit.gan@gmail.com, that's goforit.gan@gmail.com. .com. I messed that whole up. That means you can follow the show on Twitter
at
GoForItGan. You can go for it again, where you can follow the show on Twitter. Excuse me. Expected to be joined by Indianapolis Colts safety Ken Hamlin, who will talk about his offseason, his season. He had a foundation event a couple weeks ago in Miami. I saw some pictures. Seemed like it was a good time, but we're going to be joined by Ken Hamlin. Also, Matt Smith from Well Wars, which airs on Animal Planet. The show is back. It's a very exciting show, and Matt will be joining us. Also, NFL, NBA forward, Lakers forward, Matt Barnes will stop on by. He'll talk about his season and talk about what's going on with him in this offseason. And last but not least, we'll be joined by Noah Dahl, actor, one of the stars of Bad Teacher, which will be out and which will be in theaters June 24th, so make sure you check it out. June 24th, Noah Dahl, Bad Teacher. Been a long time since I said this. Jeremy, how are you?
Well, I guess that's what got you all excited a little earlier. I'm doing great. You know, looking out at the window and see a beautiful day. You know, glad I'm inside.
Yeah, well, any day is above ground is a beautiful day. And we talked on Wednesday a little bit about LeBron James and that whole situation. Jeremy, we didn't get your take on it. I mean, there's a lot of different facets of that whole situation, a lot of different angles in that with that whole situation. First off, from your perspective, with this whole LeBron James situation, the whole Miami Heat situation, before I ask the question, I got to pat myself on the back. I did predict the Dallas Mavericks to win that series in 6 games. I said it before the series start, but that's another story for another day. But, Jeremy, what are your thoughts on this NBA Finals and your thoughts on LeBron James?
Well, first, the Finals, I couldn't be happier that it wasn't Miami, and I think that is part and parcel to LeBron James. Not just LeBron James, but really his Batman, or his Robin, excuse me, which I'll call the biggest wimp in professional sports, and that's Chris Bosh. I think I agree with, what you're hearing now, all the pundits coming out and saying that unless they won a championship, this was going to be the backlash. But I think for him to now come out and tell, fans and everyone that the pressure got to him after basically, 6 years in Cleveland, saying that he never has been bothered by pressure in his life, it is a joke. I mean, he's a choke artist in this part of his career. And for him to now come out and say he's bothered by pressure is laughable, because he's been to the finals. He's been to the, he's been everywhere he had to be. He's either going to win or he's not. And the biggest problem is, instead of saying the real truth, which no one in Miami is ready to deal with, which is the fact that they have, and you hear this a lot in football, which is if you have two starting quarterbacks, you really have none. And in Miami, they have essentially three leaders, but they have zero. I mean, the real leader of that team, and you've been saying it, and I think you're, this was a series that proved it. The real leader of this team, ultimately is Dwayne Wade, but that comes at a big price, Paul. And I want to see, you know, kind of the back and forth between you and I. I mean, if you what you saw out of this final, I mean, it should have been very prevalent. They're not, meaning LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, they're not on the same level. They're clearly...
Well, I mean, let's clear some things up. First off, everybody seems to forget, yes, LeBron James had a bad NBA final, no doubt about it, averaged 17 points a game. That's not LeBron James' numbers. Also, you look at it as well, LeBron James, with everything, I mean, the first three rounds, people forget this, he averaged 7.6 points per game in the fourth quarter. In the finals against the Dallas Mavericks, he only averaged 2 points. Yes, that's a big-time drop-off. But a lot of people forget, in that Boston series and in that Chicago series, LeBron James was clutch. LeBron James was doing work in those particular series. And people forget against that Boston series, Game 5. Who scored the final 10 points for the Miami Heat? That's the one, the only Mr. LeBron James. And you look at the Chicago Bulls series, I believe it was Game 2. The score was tied up, and LeBron James scored 5 straight points and kind of put it away for the Miami Heat. People forget that. People tend to forget that. Yes, LeBron James was not clutch in these finals. Yes, LeBron James had an 8-point game in these NBA finals. Yes, LeBron James, when it came time in the fourth quarter, did not do what he had to do. But let's not discount the first three rounds. The first three rounds, LeBron James was the best player on the Miami Heat team. Not Dwayne Wade, not Chris Bosh. And I think what we are kind of hard on this team. First off, when they signed, they had this big party, and LeBron said not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven. So they kind of put the bullseye on their backs when you say those kind of things and when you celebrate like that before you even play the basketball game. But with all that being said, LeBron James, 7 years in this league, LeBron James still has a lot of quality basketball left. Is he Michael Jordan? Not yet. Will he be Michael Jordan? Probably not. Maybe not. Does he have the ability to be Michael Jordan? I say yes. But at this stage of the game, LeBron James still has some ways to go. The Miami Heat, I mean,
Paul,
it's a work in progress.
But here's the problem, and here's my most pointed question to you, which is, right now, in both of their careers, Wade and LeBron, I mean, when they're going to play on the same team, one of the two has to be above of the other. For this team to win, which one is one and which one is 1A? Or who's Batman and who's Robin? I mean, remember, when it was Shaq and Wade, who was Batman? It was Shaq. And Wade, I think smartly to get to the finals to become a winner, you didn't see Wade trying to question who was the leader, right or wrong.
Well, I will say that Dwayne Wade became Batman in those NBA finals as he won the MVP back in 2006. But I'll say this to you, with the talent that LeBron James has and the talent that Dwayne Wade has, I think it's going to be a situation where whoever's going right is going to be taking a last shot. Whoever's going right in that particular ballgame is going to be doing work and is going to be doing the scoring and doing everything else. And it's kind of hard to say who's Batman and who's Robin. Some will say Dwayne Wade is Batman. I'll say for the first three rounds, I thought LeBron James was Batman and Dwayne Wade was Robin. In these NBA finals, I have to say it flip-flopped, and it became Dwayne Wade being Batman and LeBron James becoming Robin. And a lot of people, you hear it now, and I've heard some people talk about this, but nowadays being Robin has become a bad thing. It's become a bad thing to be Robin. I mean, Scottie Pippen was Robin, and Scottie Pippen is a top 50 player of all time. So, I mean, if that's Robin, then Robin's pretty darn good. So, I mean,
But you're looking at it from the non-Robin perspective. And what I mean by that, Paul, is you're looking at it from an intelligent perspective. You're saying, right, I mean, hey, I mean, to be Robin in life, when you looked at the Batman and the Robin series, Robin was a superhero too. I mean, listen, without Batman, without Robin, there is no Batman. But I think this notion of every game should dictate who the ultimate leader of a team is Long-term, Paul, I'm telling you, there's a problem there because the team has to have a plan every game, and you're saying the plan on every game is winging it. Show me something in life that's successful without a specific plan. And the specific life, Paul, cannot be going into a football game. A team does not say whoever is, you know, the hot receiver, whoever is the best running back, whoever is playing best at quarterback is, you know, what if we're passing the ball better than we're running the ball. Teams have plans. They go into the game saying this is what we think the weakness is going to be, and this is how we think we're going to exploit it. And that's the plan. You may change your plan, but they have to have a plan. Just like you heard Dirk Nowitzki say, MVP of the finals, mind you, Paul, he couldn't hit a shot in the first half of the game, first three quarters of the game, really. But the team altered its game, you know, plan, which always is let the offense flow through Dirk, to letting it flow through, you know, Terry, who was, had a game of his life, had a series of his life, you know. And I think to go into a season or essentially a five-year contract saying we're just going to play tennis here, it's going to produce these kind of results when the NBA is littered. It's littered with talented teams now.
It is, but let's be honest. No one expected, as the playoffs start, a lot of people did not expect the Miami Heat to be in the NBA Finals. A lot of people did not expect that to happen. You saw the Boston picks and you saw the Chicago Bulls picks. There weren't a lot of Miami Heat picks out there. I was one of them who said the Miami Heat would get to the NBA Finals, not to pat myself on the back, but I was one of them who said the Miami Heat would go to the NBA Finals. Now, I had them losing actually to the Lakers, but the Lakers didn't get there, so it's irrelevant anyway. But the way I look at this team, and I understand your point, but at the same time, the way basketball is sometimes, if Dwayne Wade has it going, then Dwayne Wade needs to keep it going. If LeBron James has it going on a particular night, then LeBron James needs to keep it going. I mean, that's just the way it should be in my mind in terms of who's the leader on this ball club. I mean, it's kind of hard to say. And I think this team could use possibly a veteran presence in that locker room to kind of help with all that. But, I mean, you look at LeBron James and you look at this whole situation, we are pretty hard on the guy, I would have to say. We are pretty hard. People are pretty hard on the guy. But I guess when you make the decision and when you do all that kind of stuff, you kind of put it on yourself. But at the same time, I mean, one of those games, I believe, was Game 5. LeBron James did mess around and have a triple-double. He did mess around and have a triple-double. Granted, he didn't do what he needed to do in the fourth quarter, but he did mess around and have a triple-double. So that's not – last I checked – a triple-double is not a bad thing.
You know what, Paul? For you to be impressed that a guy of LeBron James' stature, I mean, in the NBA, a guy like LeBron James should be having triple-doubles every game in the finals. I mean, especially against the Dallas team that honestly had a lot of matchup problems against this Miami Heat team. But Miami it was very clear to see they went into this game, or this series, excuse me, Miami went into this series, I think believing that this Dallas team was going to flop out and choke, and as they did before. And not only that, I don't think that they recognized, I'll tell you, you know, who really on Dallas is very impressive is Tyson Chandler. And he didn't have great numbers, but, you know, there was a lot of talk preceding the playoffs and the finals. This guy is the emotional leader of this team. He's the vocal leader of this team. He's the defensive leader of this team, and you saw it. I mean, you watched him. He made Chris Bosh seem like a babe. And to see Chris Bosh crying at the end of those finals, as fraudulently as it was, as fake as he was crying, it was funny to watch because he should have been crying all series because Chandler locked him down. I mean, and to be locked down – in the manner he was, maybe he should have been crying.
I said the other day it looked like Chris Bosh got shot the way he kind of went to the ground like that. But, Chris Bosh, if you look at his numbers are not awful. I mean, he had 19 points in game 6 and also on only 9 shots, mind you. He did have 19 and 10 in game 5. his numbers aren't awful. His numbers definitely aren't awful, but, Tyson Chandler did do a great job in that series. I mean, Tyson Chandler is a guy that the Heat, not the Heat, the Mavericks, he's a free agent now, and they're going to have to re-sign. They're going to have to bring him back. He's very active. He does a lot of work on the boards. I mean, I like Tyson Chandler a lot.
Well, I mean, I think they're definitely going to have to bring – it's interesting not just bringing him back, but you look at and I think when you see how integrated that Miami is not in compared to a Dallas Mavericks team who certainly I think took everyone – no one suggested in the beginning of the season or even the beginning of playoffs – that they were going to do that much in the playoffs, go this far. But I will say their team is very strong. They are a sound team. They have sound players. They have great role players. They are very deep. And also, you know, that's a big problem for Miami is, you know, the pressure this year for LeBron, maybe it was a little more than it had to be only because the sad part is they this year and potentially next year because they're saddled with a lot of contract debt and no players, no draft picks. There's really not many answers for what's going to happen next year. But when you look, and that's what I say, when you look around the league, I mean, Dallas was deep, and the talent rating of a total team of maybe a B plus total talent, but their depth of the B was, I think, what ascended them because they could go in the NBA Finals to the seventh and eighth player on their bench when they needed to get some rest, when Dirk was sick, when Jason Kidd needs to get a rest. Because they can do that, that's what helps a team win in game six of an NBA Finals as opposed to, you know, the first series against, you know, the 76ers where – you know, everyone has fresh legs. It's a new season, and Miami looked great.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, and I talked about the depth of the Dallas Mavericks going into the series, and I thought that was one of the reasons that the Dallas Mavericks will win, but also coaching played a role in here. And it's not necessarily what Eric Spoelstra did not do, but it's what Rick Carlisle did do, and that is putting J.J. Barea into the starting lineup. And I thought it might have been a mistake, but it worked out for me. J.J. Barea played some great basketball in these NBA Finals. I mean, he got into the lane at will. He got into the lane at will, J.J. Barea. And if you look at it, his final two games of this series, he had 17 points in Game 5, and he also came back in Game 6 and scored 15 points. So J.J. Barea and what Rick Carlisle did by inserting him into the starting lineup was a big move, and it kind of turned the tide of this series. I mean, it was a good move, and it worked out for both Deshaun Stevenson and J.J. Barea. I mean, Deshaun Stevenson, I mean, he came off the bench and played some good basketball. He defended, and he was hitting that open three, which was big. He was hit that, and that's big. That's very big. And if you look at it, that one game, Game 3, where he had those big three-pointers there, and he was doing his thing there. And he just came back and did what he had to do. And he took his benching like a man and came back and still played his part and played his position. So I give Rick Carlisle a lot of credit here. I give him a lot of credit. I give him a lot of credit. And I got to give him a lot of credit for what happened and what he did in this series. Rick Carlisle, and again, it's not what Eric Spoelstra did not do, but it's what Rick Carlisle did do. And let's bring in now NFL safety for the Indianapolis Colts, Mr. Ken Hamlin. Ken, how are you, sir?
Doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Now, Ken, you had your charity weekend in Miami a couple weeks back. We'll get to that in a moment. But were you able to catch any of these NBA finals?
Yeah, actually, me and a friend of mine, Sean Rogers, we ended up going to the game two in Miami, which was a pretty big game. Sort of having a little want to, you know, wanting Dallas to win a little bit. So getting to see them come back, whatever the way they did in game two, it was a big game.
And it was, and watching these finals, I mean, you're surprised the way it turned out.
Somewhat surprised, but at the same time, I think that, you know, the veterans that Dallas had, the camaraderie they had, they played as a team the entire time. I think that made them, you know, the better team to win this year. Not saying they had the most talented guys, because I think Miami definitely has some talented guys, but I think that their team and the way that they played, whatever, made them the favorite and made it the way it was in the series.
And Ken, you know, you're an athlete yourself, and you see how everybody's coming down on LeBron James. You think we're being a little too hard on him?
In a way. I mean, he can only do so much. You know, it's still a team sport. You know, I know that he puts a lot of pressure on himself, and, you know, the world puts a lot of pressure on him as well to be, you know, Jordan-like and, you know, that closer and that type of thing. But, you know, he still has time. He still has years under his belt that he's going to win. They're going to win championships, I believe, and they're going to be better than they were this past year. But I think guys are really hammering it to him a little bit too much, because, I mean, he can only be one guy on the court, and it definitely takes a full team to make it happen.
Well, Ken, but what about the fact that the way in which, you know, he came to Miami this offseason? As an athlete, you've experienced free agency, you've been in the NFL long enough, you've seen, and you play with a guy like, you know, Peyton Manning, you've seen great players. To have that kind of introduction to your next team, speak about that, though, as an athlete, and what that's going to make you look like.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, it definitely set the stage up for them to, either be successful and that be, you know, the type of introduction, whatever, to where, you know, we knew what we were going to do, or, you know, for things to happen the way that they happened this year, them not to go all the way, it's sort of like, you know, you're putting yourself on a pedestal that you haven't really earned just yet. I think that, you know, that type of introduction or parade-type atmosphere should have been, you know, done at the end of the season once you, you know, you hold the trophy up in the air. But, you know, they're guys that are a little bit flashy, and they play that way. They play above the rim, and they do a lot of things that are exciting. So it's not surprising that they, you know, that they had that type of introduction, because they are, you know, big-time athletes, and they're, you know, they're some of the greatest players, some of the greatest athletes, whatever, in the world right now.
And plus, it's Miami. I mean,
it's Miami.
So you gotta party. It's Miami.
Yeah, it is Miami. So you gotta make sure, you know, you gotta have a little flash with you, you know. So I mean, I think that wasn't that surprising, but at the same time, I think guys sort of took that as, you know what, you know, if you don't win, it was already like, if you don't win, we're gonna get you for this. So yeah, it was already a little setup move.
Ken, now you started the season in Baltimore. You ended up in Indy near the end of the season. First off, what happened in Baltimore? Why didn't that situation work out for you?
Well, I think that, you know, the system they ran was a great system. I think that, you know, I learned a lot being in a system that, you know, that Harbaugh and those guys or whatever, you know, put together. They got some great safeties that are there. They got talented guys that are younger as well. So I think that, you know, it just wasn't the right fit for that time.
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, I could always go back to that system and play well in that system. And when I went to Indy, it was a great opportunity for me to go there and, you know, sort of see how they do things. And, you know, I think I feel well in that system as well. I don't think it's any system that I can't work in, given the time, whatever, just to learn what's going on or whatever. And I think that the weeks that I was in, the final weeks that I was in Indianapolis, I learned what was going on, and I was able to actually get out there on the field and perform a little bit.
Was there any thought in your mind? I mean, you did get cut by Baltimore kind of late in the season in November. Were you a little nervous that you wouldn't be able to catch on with any team at that point?
Not nervous. I mean, you know what? I never lost confidence that, you know, that my talents, you know, could still be used in the league. And even though it was late in the season and sort of, you know, playoff time is coming around. But, you know, I kept working out just, you know, and it was only like a week or two that I was out and didn't play. So, I mean, just catching on real quick, whatever, and seeing, you know, my agent telling me that there was some interest here and there, that kept, you know, kept me, you know, motivated a little bit to be able to think, whatever, that, you know what, this season is not lost. And I think that, you know, end of the season, how I did, it sort of gave me a little jump start for this year coming up, especially ending last year being healthy. That was a big part about it.
Well, and that's an interesting point. You've gone through the years with some injuries, and for you to end finally the season being healthy, and now you also mentioned the strike, how's this, you know, for you, you know, coming into it now, getting this extra time, if you will, maybe to keep yourself in shape and to continue to rehab, you know, years gone past?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, it's only been one year where I had a football injury that kept me out for four games, whatever. In my eight years that I played, you know, obviously the other year, you know, I had off the field injury, but as far as football goes, I mean, I think that I keep myself in great shape. This year with the lockout and things, I think it sort of helps in a way because you have opportunity to sort of rest a little bit more than normal. At the same time, get into that workout regimen that, you know, fits me, and that sort of I can sort of curtail things, whatever, the way that I feel my body is working, and but at the same time it's sort of you know, a down to it because not knowing, you know, the situation, me being a free agent coming up, you know, not being able to know, you know, what defense I might be a part of, and sort of getting to that system a little bit earlier so that I can have a leg up on, you know, on others, or being in the same realm where everybody else has the knowledge of the system, the defensive system. That's sort of the down part of it. But, you know, I pick up stuff fast, so I don't think that will be a problem, and I'll be ready to roll wherever I'm at.
And has the lockout changed your preparation at all? I mean, like you said, you're not with a team right now. You're still looking for a ball club. Obviously, while you're working out, you don't want to get hurt on any way. But has the lockout affected your preparation?
I don't think so. I mean, I think I still go hard. I still, you know, prepare like I'm in OTAs right now. Like I'm in an off-season workout program with the team. So it's just the fact of you being able to, you know, I guess monitor, you know, certain activities that you might do here and there, so that you won't get those type of injuries. But you can't sort of be worried about it too much, because that's when the injury will come. And I think that, you know, not being able to communicate with teams right now and sort of see, like, get a filler on what's, you know, what's needed for each team and where they want to go with certain things. You know, right now that's sort of like, you know, in the holding stages. So you got to wait for that, which, you know, when it happens, it happens. Hopefully, you know, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of training camp, but, you know, I think that it helps, and you know, it'll help a little bit more, especially since guys haven't been around each other for a while. But you know, I think that that's once they go ahead and figure things out, we can get things rolling, and you know, we can see whether I'm gonna be back in Indianapolis or whether I'm gonna be somewhere else.
We're talking to Ken Hamlin, Indianapolis Colts safety, and Ken, right now, like you said, it is the lockout day 95 of this lockout. Some progress has been made. But how frustrating has this been for you? I mean, you're a free agent, Ken, so this has got to be even more frustrating for you.
Well, I wouldn't say, you know, it's not as frustrating as it might seem, because, I mean, it's important for this time to be taken to make sure that, you know, the right steps are being made, the right decisions are being made, that, you know, we as players are getting a fair shake on things. As well as the owners, you know, they want their peace and their, you know, the way they want things to go. So I think it's going to be, you know, for them to say progress, I mean, the first 85% of stuff, whatever, is all stuff that, you know, both sides are going to agree to. It's always the small things, you know, the last couple of percentages of things where that's going to be the big time things that guys are going to have to sort of, you know, give a little bit here and there, or, you know, certain things you got to compromise on. So we'll just see. I'm sitting back just like everybody else is, trying to see where things are going to end up, how it's going to end up, and, you know, I mean, whether it's going to be, you know, our side giving in a little bit or the owner's side giving in a little bit, but we'll see how that goes. But I know that, you know, we're standing strong as far as, you know, us, you know, if they wanted to be a safe type of a league, in certain things or whatever, that I know that, you know, we want to make sure that we're getting, you know, on our side as well.
Because you were drafted, Ken, so, you know, now you're almost into a decade career. Is it helping you, you know, at your age to realize, you said some, I think, important comments. You said the word, this is an important time for the players and the owners. And I think that's a statement that a wise man would recognize, which is running in, getting a deal done, and getting back on the field for the next 4 or 5 or 6 years. If that deal is not long-term successful for ultimately, you know, who you are, which is a player, in a year, 2 years down the line, that can cause a lot of chaos and a lot of friction between these players? And how hard is it across the league to get, you know, everyone to realize that while this may be, you know, we seem to be getting a lot of media attention, this is a you know, for some players, once in a career time. This could change careers.
Oh, it's definitely. I mean, it's definitely a huge decision that needs to be made. I mean, and I think that you'll never get everyone on the same page. I mean, we have too many players, you know, and a lot of different opinions, a lot of different, you know, and some younger guys might not see it the same way, you know, and it has to do with money. I mean, the biggest thing. I mean, with younger guys, you know, wanting to go ahead and get a season started, sometimes whatever they're thinking about it just short term, but. I know we got some real intelligent guys that are young that still think of it in the long term run as far as how it's going to help them health wise, how it's going to help them, you know, money wise. I mean, I think that the biggest thing, whatever, is making sure that, you know, we can play a full long career, but at the same time when we're done, you know, we're still able to move around and be mobile and be athletic, you know, and other things that we might want to do. So I mean, it's a lot of things that's going to go into this deal. And that's why it's taken so long. You know, I don't think anybody wanted it to go this route and to be a lockout. But, you know, I know that, you know, the young guys and the older guys, we want to play football, but at the same time, we wanted to get in the right situation.
We're talking to Ken Hamlin, safety, Indianapolis Colts. And Ken, right now, if you look at it, you were a Pro Bowler with the Dallas Cowboys back in 2007. What do you need to do to kind of get back to that Pro Bowl level?
You know what, and I can honestly say or whatever, I believe that I'm at that level. You look at, you know, one thing I never do is I don't make excuses for my play, because my play is, you know, I make sure that I critique myself harder than anybody could. You look at the year that I did go to the Pro Bowl. It was different situations. I mean, you know, different coaching, different situation, different type of styles of coaching. You know, I had an aggressive style of DB coach who, you know, would get mad at me if I didn't go, you know, steal a dig, or if I didn't go, you know, go try to take a chance on a route here or there. And then when you get a different style of coach that's more on, you know, play deep safety and be a true safety, you know, and that's what I did. So you got to know what you want. If you want a guy that's going to be aggressive, I'm going to be that guy. If you want a guy that's going to play the position and make sure that he, you know, covers his corners and make sure that they're good, I'm going to be that guy. You know, you tell me what you want from me or whatever, and I'm going to make sure it happens.
And definitely back in 2007, you made it happen. And like you said, I agree with you. I still think you got some good football left, and we'll see what happens in this 2011 season. And Ken, on this show, we like to play a game called Who's Better. You ready to play? I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better.
All right.
Ken, who's better city? Dallas, Texas, Seattle, Washington?
I got to say Dallas, especially right now with, you know, how hot, you know, the city is. You know, I think that the teams that are in that city are, you know, combined doing a great job. Dallas, you know, Cowboys are bounced back. But they're a big part of that city as well. But the Mavs, you know, doing what they've done and, you know, sort of making the city the hot spot right now, I think that they're the best the city.
Better player, LeBron James or Dirk Nowitzki?
Oh, you know what? You got to go with the guy that has a championship under his belt right now. A better player, probably Dirk, in the way he plays his game, but LeBron is going to be and is one of the greatest players to play the game right now. He does it in so many different ways, and he's electrifying when he gets the ball in his hand.
Better than Jordan?
No, I can't say that. No, I won't put him up there with the GOAT right now. You gotta get a couple of things on your finger before I can even go that route.
better city to party, Miami or Memphis?
Ooh. Hometown is always fun to go back to, but Miami is the city, man. I think if you would have said Miami or Vegas, it would have been a little bit of an argument, but Miami probably takes that.
All right, better city to party, Miami or Vegas?
You know what? Man, I love Vegas. It's just, you know, I think when you get up in there and you start partying, everyone just has such a great time. I mean, you know, it's nobody really worried about the next person. You know, each person is just having a great time, enjoying the atmosphere. So I'd probably say Vegas.
Okay, Vegas. All right, sounds good, sounds good. And one last one, McDonald's or Burger King?
Ooh, I love having it my way. But I would say that McDonald's, you know, when I go there, I go crazy. Double quarter pounder, then I think it's nuggets, some apple pies. Apple pies kill it. They make sure that, you know, two for $1, whatever. You can't eat that. So I'd have to say McDonald's.
All right, McDonald's. I would agree with you. I mean, I'm a big time McDonald's fan, and
yeah.
Worked for McDonald's for many years, flipping burgers. So
hey,
I got to pick
that's
McDonald's.
That's where I started at. I worked at McDonald's as well. So, you know, we got that in common.
And Jeremy also started at McDonald's. So this is a McDonald's family here. It's a McDonald's
crew
here.
Hey, you know what? Hey, we can talk stories, whatever.
here you go. I was probably going to laugh when I say this. We used to joke all the time when we were in high school. We used to ask each other, cheese on 12 regs.
Oh, wow.
So if you know that, Ken, you could probably tell our listeners something special, huh?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had so many combinations going on in the back, whatever. They needed to put it on the menu, but they never did.
I used to do the same thing. I used to have a lot of different things I used to do. And I still today could step into a McDonald's kitchen and make a Big Mac with no problem.
Oh, no question. I go in there and make it happen. I can step back there and probably teach them a few things.
And now, Ken, you had your foundation weekend in Miami a couple weeks back. Tell us about your foundation and tell us about your event.
Well, my foundation is the Ken Hamlin Foundation. Benefiting single-parent households. I think the biggest thing is that we try to empower and try to help out in any way we can with the parents. And it sort of filters down to the kids. I mean, one thing I do is I love working with kids, you know, being around kids, and something we did in Miami. You know, we had a few events, had a few things going on, and everything benefited. Big Brothers, Big Sisters are great in Miami. And, you know, we got out there. I had a little VIP reception at Saks Fifth that benefited, you know, purchases that were done that day benefited the foundation. Had a pool party where, you know, a friend of mine, Teresa was, you know, Caldwell, she had a shop that she had set up, and she was doing stuff, selling stuff there for the foundation. This Sunday, we had a big, like, play day with the kids, and a lot of my friends came out, supported the event, and, you know, we went out there, you know, played basketball, you know, had, like, the big jumping tubes things going on. I mean, we did a lot of things out there with the kids, and it was fun. I mean, it was fun for them, but it was actually fun for us as well to get out there because we got to, you know, to get your inner child out again and sort of get out there and run around and play around.
And I saw some of the pictures. Seems like you guys were doing a lot of great things down there, and that's always a good thing when you're doing work in the community. And I also saw some of those party pictures, Ken. I mean, you guys also were having a good time too.
Oh, yeah, you know, you do stuff, whatever, during the day to give back, and then, you know, you sort of give a little bit on the other end when we get out or whatever, make sure the guys have a good time.
Ken, where can we find out information about this foundation?
Oh, well, you can go to my website. It's kennethhamlin.com, and, you know, all my information from me, you know, the blogs that I set up, talking about the foundation or talking about just things in general. My foundation link is on that website. Everything is on that. So, you know, everything you need to know about me, what's going on, where I'll be next year once I find out, everything will be happening on there. And I'm on Twitter at Ken_Hamlin. So you can check me out on there as well.
Ken, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, sir. It was a pleasure talking to you. Good luck with whatever happens in the off season. Hopefully you'll land somewhere, and you will land somewhere. It's just a matter of where. So, Ken, nothing but the best of luck to you, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Take care.
All right.
Ken Hamlin, NFL safety. Ken is a free agent, but he played for the Indianapolis Colts last year. And, you know, we touched on McDonald's. I mean, again, I still could step into a McDonald's kitchen today and put together a Big Mac, a double quarter pounder with cheese. I still could do it. I still could do it. Sauce on the bottom, sauce in the middle, onions on everything, both the bottom and the middle, cheese on the bottom.
Probably why we had some halitosis.
Two pickles on the middle.
Don't forget the mayo, Paul.
There's no mayo. It's the special sauce.
On the pickles.
There's no mayo. That's disgusting. We're going to be joined now very shortly by Matt Smith from Well Wars, which airs on Animal Planet, and that's a great show. I mean, a lot of action, and my brother talks about it all the time. So, I mean, make sure you check it out. It's on Animal Planet each and every Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. But we're going to be joined by Matt Smith very shortly now, and he's going to talk about the show and give us some insight about Well Wars. Let's bring in Matt now. We're now being joined by one of the newest members of Animal Planet's Well Wars, Mr. Matt Smith. Matt, how are you, sir?
Fine. How's it going, Paul?
I'm doing great. Matt, this is your first year on the show. How'd that come about?
Paul asked me to join Sea Shepherds last year when I went to Taiji to try to stop the slaughter of the dolphins. I met up with a gentleman named Scott West, and I was introduced to Sea Shepherd. I was actually introduced to Paul through him, and I was getting ready to actually leave and go back home, and Scott West handed me the phone, and it was Captain Paul Watson on the other line, and he said he asked if I wanted to go to Antarctica, and I said absolutely. So that's how I went to Antarctica this year.
And Matt, your role on the ship to Bob Barker, you're a deckhand and a crew operator. For those who are not familiar with those titles, tell us exactly what you do.
Okay. I guess being part of the deckies, you help cook, you clean, you basically maintain the ship. You know, if you hit any ice, you have to patch a hole. That's one of the main things that we rehearsed over and over. You know, if somebody gets hurt, we did a lot of first aid and CPR training. It's basically the heart and blood of the ship. And as far as the crane operator, I just ran the crane. I let the Zeppelins in when Chad came over from the Steve Irwin. I dropped his Delta in 4 or 5 times. And, yeah, that's basically what it was.
And, Matt, you talked about before how you went out and you went out to try to protect dolphins. Now you're out here protecting whales. Talk about the risks involved in doing this.
Well, there's always going to be risks when money's involved because we do it for free. I mean, we do it, you know, because I guess it's in our hearts to try to save other species on the planet. And we're talking about millions and millions of dollars that the Japanese can get from the dolphins and the whales. So they can get quite angry, quite upset, and quite violent in order, you know, to make their money. So there's always going to be violence, whether it's intentional or non-intentional, especially when you're face-to-face over in Japan or in the Faroe Islands or in Canada with the seals. Yeah, it can get quite violent.
And how big of an issue is whaling in general?
I think whaling is a huge issue because it's one that can be won. A lot of issues out there have a lot of lobbyists behind them, a lot of money, and the laws are not in place for the good guys. But I think the laws are in place for us on whaling, and just no one's here to enforce them. And I think it's a war that can be won, and hopefully we won it down in Antarctica this year. So it's a huge fight for me, but it's a fight that can actually be won in my lifetime. And if it is, I would say I'll just move on to the next fight.
We're talking to Matt Smith, one of the newest members of Animal Planet's Well Wars, which airs on Fridays at 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. And Matt, you know, for those who have not seen Well Wars, tell them exactly what they're missing.
Well, the Japanese whaling fleet go down to Antarctica every summer which in America is my winner. They go down there and they hunt whales. And we go down there and try to enforce the law. It is the law. We go down there and enforce the law because basically the government isn't willing or capable to do it. The United Nations isn't willing or capable. And sometimes it gets violent. Sometimes we have to do things that we'd prefer not to do, but by all means, we never break the law. We enforce the law. And we're more than willing to put our lives, our ships, everything that we own on the line just to save one whale because it's worth it.
And Matt, you have a family back home in Wisconsin. Has the wife and the kid, have they tried to talk you out of this?
Actually, yeah, they have. I just got back from Iowa. I've been gone for a week. And my son has birthday. You know, it's a little hard sometimes. So you just have to run with the punches, I guess.
And Matt, obviously we talked about the risks of doing this. How close have you come to being injured during this campaign?
Actually, I think I was one of the ones that got injured the most. We were following the Nishin Maru inside a field of ice, and Posse ran up to me and said, go downstairs and wake everybody up. The Nishin Maru was making a break for it. And I went running downstairs head first, accidentally, and completely split my head wide open.
Wow.
And the doctor, actually out at sea, had to give me stitches out there. So that, I think as far as the crew on all three ships, I think I was the one that got hurt the worst, but it was nothing of their doing. It was me rushing and not taking my time, which when you're out at sea, things can get a little hectic and accidents happen. So that's why we have a doctor on board, I guess.
And that's, luckily for you, that's a good thing because you got yourself all stitched up and now you're back and ready to go. And I was actually reading, Matt, that you have a whale tattooed on your arm. Talk about that.
Yeah, I got a whale tattoo of a minke whale. We had a tattoo artist on ship who is Chief Shepherd's director of, I believe it's art. His name is Giet. I can't ever pronounce his name. I feel embarrassed I can't say that. But I asked him the second day on campaign, I said, look, you know, I hear you're a really good tattoo artist. You know, is it okay if you go ahead and give me a tattoo? And he said, yeah, you know, absolutely. And to my surprise, the day we found the Nishin Maru, which is the Japanese whaling factory ship, our number one target, Alex and Giet called me up to the bridge and asked if I would like to have my tattoo that day. And I said, hell yeah. You know, I said, absolutely. I think that would be really cool. So I got my tattoo of a minke whale up on the bridge on my forearm the day we found the Nishin Maru, and I'm very proud of that.
Wow, that's a great story. We're talking to Matt Smith, one of the newest members of Whale Wars, which airs on Animal Planet Fridays, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And Matt, the goal here is to stop whaling. That's the goal. Oh, that's the ultimate goal. How much of what you guys have done and brought awareness from the show, how much has this done to stop the hunting of whales?
I think it's huge. I think what Paul Watson has done over the last 30 years has laid the basic groundwork for a lot of environmental movements. And having a television show, obviously, can get what we do out to millions and millions of people. And Animal Planet and Sea Shepherd got together, I believe it was 4 years ago now, and they decided, you know, to make a show. And they do what they do on the ship, and we do what we do. They have no say-so in what we do, and we have no say-so in what they put on the air. So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Like when I fell down the stairs and cut my head open, I would have preferred that not got on television, but, you know, you do what you got to do. And it's definitely got the awareness out. For Sea Shepherd, yeah. For Animal Planet, yeah. But in my opinion, most importantly for the whales, because you know, it kind of seems like a 70s or 80s sort of an issue, or maybe even an early 90s. And people don't, I don't think they still know that it happens, or they didn't know that it happened until, you know, they flipped on Animal Planet, and there's this show about a bunch of, you know, a bunch of pirates out there in Antarctica still fighting the good fight. And I think it's been fantastic for both the sides, Animal Planet and Sea Shepherd.
Again, make sure you check it out. Whale Wars airs on Animal Planet Fridays at 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. Matt, it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, sir, with the show and everything that you're doing. Keep up the good work, sir. Everybody, make sure you check out the show. It's a great show. Check it out. Lots of action. Check it out. Matt Smith, Whale Wars, Animal Planet. Matt, it was a pleasure, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Matt Smith, Whale Wars, and, you know, that was, it's an interesting show. It definitely truly is an interesting show. And, you know, I watch it from time to time, and it's enjoyable. I mean, it's a lot of action. It's definitely a lot of action, a lot of action. And, you know, if you like action, you definitely will like Whale Wars. Again, airs on Animal Planet each and every Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific, and you'll like it. Check it out. Make sure you check it out. I watch it, and make sure you check it out as well. And make sure you check this out, and this is not a good thing, but the NBA lockout, there is a possibility that this could happen. They are negotiating right now, but as of right now, there has not been a deal. But they're negotiating, which is a good thing. They're talking. They are talking, which is always a good thing. But this is a league that, I mean, the NFL, they can afford to have a lockout. If any league can afford to have a lockout, it's the NFL, because the NFL right now is king. But the NBA, you cannot afford to have a lockout right now. I mean, a lot of momentum with your NBA Finals. It was a great NBA Finals, got great ratings, and a lot of people watched it. You got a lot of exciting stars, LeBron, Durant, Wade, Howard, you name it, they're out there. A lot of exciting stars out there. And you look at everything and you say, this is a league that's on the up and up. A lockout will not be good for this league. It will not be good. Ultimately, the fans would come back, because that's what they do. They talk the good talk and talk a good game and say they'll never come back to football. They'll never come back to basketball. They'll never come back to baseball. They talk the talk, but, you know, people are people and people lie. So at the end of the day, they'll come back. But you got to – I mean, the popularity is great right now with the NBA, and you got to kind of just keep building on that and building on that. A lockout will not help that situation. A lockout will hurt what was built, what you guys have built. A lockout would only make it worse. It only make it worse. So they got to come to the table. And if you're the NBA, there's some things you need to clean up. I mean, the guaranteed contracts, the length of the guaranteed contracts, maybe they can do something with that. I mean, in terms of the salary cap situation.
No, Paul.
You look at the NBA.
They got a lot to clean up. Not some things. They got a lot to clean up. And you hit the nail on the head. And the NBA's already been through this. They went through this years ago in last time. They don't need – and you're right. Coming out of this horrible economy where many of these NBA teams, they actually can show on paper, unlike the NFL, they can show the down attendance, how much losses they've taken. And they can also show, you know, you cannot pay – we are in love with the 76ers. You cannot pay Max Iger to basically sit at home when he's retired. You cannot pay Sean Bradley. You cannot pay Theo Ratliff to win the championship with Detroit. These teams can't do this and be financially sound. These guaranteed contracts have got to go. The NBA is potentially, if they don't look at this, from a deeper perspective, if I'm a player too, by the same token, and certainly we have a chance to get an NBA player perspective. I'm not giving up what I already have. I mean,
I wouldn't want to give up guaranteed. I'm not to interrupt. I'm sorry, but I wouldn't want to give up guaranteed contracts either. I mean, I don't really want to give that up.
So you very much have to look at where this is going to go, and everyone knows where it's where it's heading in that regard. It's heading same place, same time, same channel NBA is no man's land. Because it's too early. Unfortunately, it's too early to tell, where and how and who, who's going to do what and how they're going to do it. But you know this, Paul. We both know this. No one wants this. No one's going to want to give. The players are not going to say, oh, you know what? You're right. The guaranteed money is just ridiculous. And so because we come into the league, the way they come into the league is very difficult. You come in on a very fixed salary. If you're a lottery player, you do get some good money, but not enough. So you got to get through those couple years. And then, you can get a nice payday. Really where the money is going to come is if you can stay in this league, into your second full contract, then you can really make some long-term big bucks. But is that something that they're willing to sacrifice to give up those long-term guaranteed 6-year, $100 million deals? When you're a 6-year player in the league, to give up that 6 years, is that something they're going to sacrifice? Not right off the bat.
Well, if you're a player, why would you want to give up guaranteed contracts? Why would you want to give up all these good things that you have? I mean, I know I wouldn't. But I mean, I think there's something needs to be done in terms of, some kind of salary cap amnesty or something, where teams, because you look at the NBA, I mean, you got teams, I heard David Aldridge bring up this point. I mean, you have teams trading for contracts. They're not trading for players, they're trading for contracts. And that's not a good thing. I mean, trades should be made to help the team on the court, not necessarily off the court all the time. And also, you look at it, I mean, some teams just go through cap hell, and they never get out of it. It takes 3-4 years to get out of it. Look at the Knicks. I mean, it took them a long time, and they're still getting out of cap hell. It took them so long just to get out of cap hell. The Sixers, same deal. They were saddled with some bad contracts. And you look around the league, and you see it everywhere. Teams saddled with bad contracts, and because of the way the system is set up, they just have to eat them. And thus, they're going to have their team is not good for a few years. And basically, you have a bad product. And some big markets, bad products in Philadelphia for an extended period of time, a bad product in New York for an extended period of time, and that's not good. You want New York, you want Philadelphia, you want Boston, you want L.A., you want those franchises to be relevant. You want those franchises to be relevant. It's good for your product. You want that to be relevant. You want it. You want relevancy in New York. You want relevancy in Philadelphia. You want it in all major big cities around this league. You want that. You want that, and it's a good thing. It truly is a good thing. But so something needs to be done along those lines. But, again, they have to work this out because they can't afford, like the NFL, to have a 95-day lockout. They can't afford to do that. They cannot afford to do that. It's just not good business because of the fact that, again, NFL can't afford to do that. The NBA, your product is growing. You have momentum. Let's kind of capitalize on this momentum and keep this thing moving. That's what you want
to do. The biggest thing, and the difference is, Paul, and you said this, and it couldn't be, spot on, which is that to compare the NBA to the NFL, or to compare, I mean, almost in total, you'd have to look at every team in total or every major sport in total, add them up, and then you may be at the level, if you will, of the NFL stature, but other than that, it's never going to work. They're not getting that level. So to me, you can't sit around and play. If you're David Stern, you have to be a little bit more realistic and recognize that these players, like everything else, injury is at the cusp of all of this. Injury is equatable to income. For the NBA, that's guaranteed money. But you're right. You can't. These teams cannot. Let's look at the best case in point. Really is LA Clippers. I mean, they had a real talented team. You go back 3-5 years ago, And they could never get over the hump because there were – they always were one or two players short because of really, you know, because of bad contracts from 4 or 5 years ago that they were in always in the last year of one contract.
But also with the Clippers, I mean, you also have to point to management. I mean, Donald Sterling has not been a guy who's been willing to pay the money for those for his players. I mean, he's notorious for that, very notorious for that.
No,
he doesn't like to play his.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Positively, absolutely. There is. That's why I said you don't want to go too far left and basically say right, giving the fact that there's no what's the word I'm searching for. There's no consequence to a bad business decision because that's ultimately then there's no. I guess the term would be competition, but by the same token, we certainly want to see some of these players. They get an injury, and you can't project what's going to happen, and to be saddled with their contract, is it really fair?
Well, just like in life, you want an opportunity to have a second chance, and so you want that second chance to come kind of sooner than later. But what happens in the NBA, it's coming a lot later than sooner. And, again, when you have that, you're affecting your product, which is not a good thing. And I said before, and I'll say it again, you want your product to be – you want basketball to be great in New York. You want basketball to be great in Boston. You want basketball to be great in Philadelphia. You want basketball to be great in L.A. I mean, you want basketball to be great in Chicago. You want basketball to be great in your major cities. That's what you want if you're the NBA. And – unfortunately, because of the way the salary cap is constructed, you had a lot of bad basketball in Philadelphia. You had a lot of bad basketball in New York City. And you want to have good basketball in those areas. And to me, with this current system, I don't know how possible that is all the time when you make a mistake. The second hour of Go For It starts now. Go For It. We have Matt Barnes from the Los Angeles Lakers coming up shortly. Also, Noah Dahl from Bad Teacher, actor from Bad Teacher. Bad Teacher will be in theaters June 24th, so Noah Dahl is going to stop on by, and he's going to talk about that movie and talk about his acting career. I mean, you see the previews for that movie. It looks kind of funny. It looks very funny, actually. So, again, that'll be in theaters on June 24th, and again, Matt Barnes, Los Angeles Lakers forward, will be joining us very shortly, and it's going to be interesting to get his take on the Dallas Mavericks and everything. I mean, the Dallas Mavericks did go through the Los Angeles Lakers, but also Matt Barnes, I mean, he was a guy who played for the Golden State Warriors when they beat up on the Dallas Mavericks, so it should be interesting to get his take and to see how he views Dirk then to Dirk now. I mean, Dirk Nowitzki has pretty much, I mean, he was clutch in these playoffs, and, you know, he averaged 10 points in the fourth quarter in these NBA finals. That's getting it done. That's putting in work. And Dirk Nowitzki put in a lot of work this year, a lot of work, and many argued that he really was the true MVP of this season. But Dirk Nowitzki put in a lot of work this year, but it should be interesting to get his Matt Barnes' take on Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks and that whole situation, because those Dallas Mavericks did go through the Los Angeles Lakers. And when I look back on that series now, real quickly, I say to myself after those first three games, it is kind of funny. You say that with the Mavericks versus the Lakers, and you can say it, Mavericks versus the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals. If I look at those series, the Miami Heat easily could have won that series in 4, if not 5, and the Los Angeles Lakers could have been up 2-1 after 3 games against the Dallas Mavericks in their series. But this team, the Dallas Mavericks, had a way of just coming back. They had a way of just doing what they had to do when the chips were down and you thought everything was done and you thought they were going to lose. They had a way of just coming on back and getting it done. And they did it. And they got it done in these NBA finals, and they got it done throughout these playoffs, and they got it done throughout the year. If you look at it, Caron Butler, a guy that was big for the Dallas Mavericks and is big for the Dallas Mavericks, was a guy who went down during the season, and he wasn't involved in any of the playoffs, and Caron Butler was a big-time contributor to the Dallas Mavericks, but he was gone. But guess what? Just like the Dallas Mavericks have done throughout this season and throughout these playoffs, they have come back from adversity. They don't let things stop them. Down 15 points with 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Guess what? They come back and win. That crazy game against Oklahoma City in these playoffs, down late in the game. Guess what? They come back and win. I mean, that's what these Dallas Mavericks have done in these playoffs. They're the comeback kids, if you will. And they have come back and come on back each and every time they were down. And even against the Lakers in that series, I mean, they came back from fourth quarter deficits in game one and game three. And so, but again, this team, the Dallas Mavericks, they don't let a little adversity stop them. They just don't. They haven't throughout this whole season. Kudos to that ball club. I mean, that was a tough-minded team, and I didn't realize how tough-minded they were. But they showed me a lot. I mean, they showed me a lot in these NBA finals. They showed a whole heck of a lot. I'm impressed.
But I think it does very much get back to Rick Carlisle. He coached, I think, a great season in Dallas. They could have maybe done better throughout the season, but I certainly think it was clear get to the playoffs. You know, getting into the playoffs to them what was going to be key.
And also you got to remember Dirk Nowitzki went down for some time, and also alluded to Caron Butler. But so they lost some players, and even in these finals, Brendan Haywood, a guy that they counted on throughout the season, he went down, and then the custodian came on in, Brian Cardinal. He came on and gave them some good minutes. And so they have found a way, no matter what happened, no matter the things they went through, the adversity they may have experienced, no matter what happened, they have found a way to get it done, and they've gotten it done. And ultimately, that is why Dirk Nowitzki and the rest of the Dallas Mavericks will be getting rings, and that's why Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks were able to lift that trophy. And there have been talk. Mark Cuban of talking about doing something differently in terms of, you know, more often than not, every year the team who wins, they get rings. Well, Mark Cuban was saying that was old now. It was time to change it up a little bit. But, I mean, the players to this point still have said they want rings. So more than likely, Mark Cuban won't do anything. But what do you think, Jeremy? Would you want a ring, or would you want whatever Mark Cuban has up his sleeves?
Well, if it's free, it's for me. That's number one. I'm getting a ring, if I'm not paying for it, I guess I'm happy. If by chance it's something else, I think, you know, maybe Mark Cuban, he hadn't talked in a few weeks, almost a couple of months there, and maybe the pressure of all the media and that specific occasion got the better of him, because I think to say that you're not going to get a team a ring when – the one comment he actually was referencing is that there's a whole organization that should be recognized, and not just maybe the players in the front office. But I know that other teams in the past have done that. They have gotten, like, different types of rings. Some people, you know, some of the lower-level staff have gotten, like, you know, smaller rings with not as much money as other people. But by the same token, I think his idea actually – like everything else, and Mark Cuban, I think, is a guy who thinks outside the box. Is it the worst thing in the world to say you're not going to have a ring, but you're going to get a hat or a plaque? Well, I mean, it's still going to be expensive, I think. So again, it's that level. But also, you know, it is interesting when you do look at what these rings, sometimes, unfortunately, you see in sports, the first thing they do for some of these players is they sell them. And so maybe to personalize the gift so it does, if you're a guy like Mark Cuban, it means maybe more to the people that get them they have to keep them rather than to go right over to a pawn shop and say, here's the, you know, here's the player's ring, here's the GM ring, or here's the front office ring of the Mavs, and you get $5,000 in cash for something that it was never really meant to be cash. It was meant to be, you know, a piece of memorabilia for a job well done. It is certainly, to me, maybe worth the thought. I guess I come from that same kind of school, that outspokenness, where it does kind of get a little sick to think that some of these players, and yes, they're down on their luck or front office people because they're, you know, they're like me, maybe just a numbers guy, and they realize this is a $10,000 ring. I'll just go hawk it and make $3,500. And I didn't really play in the Super Bowl. I was just the assistant to the traveling secretary. So what do I need with a ring? But then do you really deserve that ring? If all you meant to do, why don't you take $500 or ask the guy for $600 and be done? So I'd like to see what he does, because I'm a big fan of Mark Cuban's, and I think sometimes some of this stuff in professional sports goes a little bit too far.
Well, you also have to think about this. You talked about Mark Cuban being a billionaire. In order to be a billionaire, sometimes you're going to have to think outside the box. So billionaires think outside the box. That's just who they are. That's how they make their money. Mark Cuban, a billionaire, is trying to think outside the box here. But sometimes in certain situations, you just have to stay within those confines of the box. Sometimes you got to stay in the box. And I think it would be Mark Cuban's best interest just to keep it the same, keep the traditions going on, and continue to give out rings. Just make it, I don't know, more diamonds, or make it more special. I don't know how you do it. But I'm not Mark Cuban. I'm not a billionaire. But just do something to make it nice, make it better, make it different. But different doesn't always mean better sometimes. But do something to make it better and make it nice. And you talked about some of the players. Sometimes they sell them and do what they got to do. Hey, if the money is bad, you got to do what you got to do. Ultimately, you got to eat. And that's what it's all about. I mean, we all have to eat. And whatever you have to do, long it's legal. As long as it's legal, whatever you got to do to eat is fine with me. And if that, if you know, certain players have to sell rings to eat, then hey, it's all right with me. You got to do what you got to do. I can't help you. I can't feed you. So you got to do what you got to do to feed yourself, and you got to do what you have to do to eat. And if that means selling a championship ring, then that means selling a championship ring. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, you would agree with that, Jeremy. I mean, you got to eat, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, again, Paul, we're right. We're certainly, you know, on the quote unquote on the same page. I think, again, but my perspective on it is certainly maybe a little bit differently. I don't appreciate, I guess, the fact that, you know, these. That's why I wonder why they always have to have diamonds and so on and so forth kind of put in there, because, I mean, is that really the goal then? I mean, was the goal to go out and sell this, or was the goal for it to be a keepsake?
I think ultimately the goal was...
it bears to do what they want with it, and I understand that. But I think, it's not the greatest thing in the world to see.
Well, I think the goal was for it to be a keepsake, but... hey, I mean, with in all that, you still have to eat, and if things happen, things happen. You know, the goal is to always keep your house. You know what I mean? That's your goal. Your goal is to keep your house. That's it. That's your goal. Now, whatever happens along the way is what happens, but your goal is to keep your house. And if, you know, whatever, any means necessary, and if you got to do what you got to do, that's what you got to do. And so I'm not mad at anybody that has to sell their ring to eat, you know, because
I'm not mad at him either. I just think that, again, it does to me get a little bit cumbersome or cheesy. I hate to use, you know, those kind of words, but it's a little bit, annoying to see that. So, but that's why I say, by that token, I think it gets maybe to a point where it's a little overkill.
Yeah, well,
so,
again,
Paul, we all, you and I are always splitting hairs. I think sometimes, and this has always been my big argument with professional sports, either it's a business like the WWF, or it's a hobby like, waterball. Handball. Because to make this, to say that it's a sport where, you know, it's for the love of the game, but these people are being paid millions of dollars, all this money is involved with this. And then to say that, but at the end of this culminating event, we're recognizing, again, the sheer greatness of one organization or one team, but then all they're getting is more money. I mean, they're getting a $4,000 ring, $10,000 ring, $40,000 ring, and then they hock it for $10,000. We're boiling it back down to the same thing. I mean, when Hulk Hogan retired, he may have been 10-time world championship in WWE, WWF, whatever it's called today or tomorrow, but you can't sell the championship because it's fake to begin with, and everyone knows that. And so, I mean, but all we're doing is, how real is it to be an NBA world champion if you can go to a pawn shop and you can hold the Heisman Trophy or you can wear a championship ring? I mean, are you, if you buy it, then Paul, I mean, it goes to the holder. Then do you own the ring? If you own the ring, are you a 1967 Super Bowl MVP? If you have a ring,
according to the ring, you are. According to the ring, you are.
And you believe
that. You know? According to the ring. Well, obviously you're not. But, I mean, you know, again, through the course of life, let's just hope that I will never be in that position where we have to sell things that mean so much to us in order to live and in order to
but
eat.
They don't,
let's
but
just
Paul,
hope we're never in that position. But,
they
you know,
don't mean,
people,
they never
people
mean,
are in a bad position
mean,
where they have to.
They don't mean anything.
People,
let's keep that real, Paul. They don't mean, they absolutely positively do not mean anything to the people that are using them. They can't. You have to at least give me that point. You can't say.
Yeah, no, I'll disagree with you. Let's just say, for example, my favorite team of 2000-2001, Philadelphia 76ers, won the NBA title. And I bought Eric Snow's championship ring. I think it would mean something to me. It may not mean the same amount that it meant to Eric Snow. But
No.
It
but
might
no, no,
mean...
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Eric Snow. It doesn't mean anything to Eric Snow. And here's why. And let me make
but why. Why doesn't it mean anything to Eric Snow? I mean, Eric Snow, he went through the training camp. He went through the 82 games. He went through the playoffs. He went through all that. He sacrificed a lot of time with his family. He sacrificed a lot of time just relaxing and chilling. He sacrificed a lot of time. So tell me why that does not mean much to him.
Again, here's what I'll tell you. At the end of the day, Paul, these players are not playing this game. They're sacrificing. They're not playing this game for free, are they? I mean, Eric Snow sacrificed all that for what? His paycheck. Or did he really sacrifice it for the ring? You're trying to, I think, pull wool over people's eyes and forget. I want to see LeBron James, or I want to see why did Shaq retire this year as opposed to last year? Well, let's see. I mean, he barely played this season. He only made how much did he make, Paul? How much did Shaquille O'Neal make this year?
Oh, I want to say he made the veteran minimum.
He made the veteran, which is how much? Which is about what? It's less than
a million and something.
Yeah. So for $1 million, when we said, what, almost 6 months to a year ago on the air, this man has so much money that when they released the, you know, his spending habits, he was spending how much money, Paul, a month?
A lot.
Remember when we said it? Yeah.
I don't remember the number, but I know it was a lot.
Several hundred thousand dollars. It was over basically his Trump change, what you and I go, well, not you because you don't give up a penny. But when a normal person goes and says they have disposable income, this man's disposable income, if you remember, was close to $800,000 a year, close to $1 million of just that's just gas and Wawa money. So for him to be busting his you know what for $1 million, when he's got endorsement deals, production companies, movie contracts, and TV appearances, and all this other sourceable income, it's not profitable for the business that was the athlete Shaquille O'Neal. So he's done. He retired, had a big press conference, and what did he do? It was a huge commercial for what he's going to do next. In fact, he opened it by saying, stay tuned. I mean, so this is not it's a business. You know, Eric Snow played and practiced because Eric Snow didn't want Kevin Ollie to take his spot, which he could have if he wasn't
Yes, it is. We all know it's a business, but I mean, at the same time, you're still within a business. There's still sacrifices you make. I mean, if anybody was named, if somebody is an accountant and was named Accountant of the Year, or somebody's a teacher named Teacher of the Year, you know, that plaque or whatever they may receive would mean something to them because they are Teacher or Accountant of the Year. And so they earned it, and they sacrificed time with their family. They sacrificed time just doing nothing.
They sacrificed a lot. But Accountant of the Year, Teacher of the Year, those individuals of the year withstanding, let's keep this real, Paul. How much money are those people making in a comparative form from the professional athletes that you're now talking about? Nowhere near, again, in a comparative fashion. The term, you know, it's not necessarily maybe a widely accepted word, but in a comparator fashion, it's not. These professional athletes, when they win these championships, at the end of every day, it's meaningless to them.
You can't say that. I mean, there's guys who are on their last leg out there fighting and going and shooting themselves up and doing all those things they have to do to get out on the court, everywhere they need to do.
But they do that.
You're talking
about what, Paul? You're talking about let's see. We're talking about money, remuneration. No, none of these people, who is doing that for the little bit of money? None of them. None of them are going to do that if they weren't making and getting paid money. I mean, you would agree with that. They're not going, none of those athletes, if someone said, and that's why I use Shaq. I'm going to use Shaq simply because, to me, he is the simplest and the most now notable of people. Shaquille O'Neal doesn't and won't play basketball next season if for $1 million. It beat him up. It's tearing into his body. And somebody probably said to his agent, his whoever, said, you can do better. We can go ahead and do a movie deal, Shaq. We have a production company. You have your record label, we can get you into this avenue. You can become a, do appearances like these losers on all of these silly reality shows. In fact, you can do a reality show, Shaq. You can do a porno if you want to. Nowadays, put out a sex tape, you're making money. So go screw a lady and you'll make money.
I think there was a Shaq sex tape leaked recently, actually.
Right. I mean, talk about it. And so to me, I hate to be the bearer of the bad news, but I don't see it that. I guess I don't see it that way, Paul. I see it as, to me, unfortunately, as I said, it very much is. It's not that way at all. It's a shame to say that, but it's not very true to form.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with you on this one. Sometimes life has a way of making decisions for us, if you understand what that means. And that essentially means that, sometimes you lose your job. Sometimes you made poor financial decisions. Sometimes you did this. Sometimes you did that. And you're forced to do this and you're forced to do that. You may not want to do it. You may not even feel comfortable doing it. But guess what? You have to do what you have to do because that's what happened in life, and that's what happens. I mean, things have a way of making us do things that we may not want to do, but it's things that we have to do. And it becomes is what it is sometimes, but, I mean, enjoy your rings, Dallas Mavericks and everybody else. Enjoy your rings. And actually, speaking of Shaq, I just came across this story. Apparently, seven alleged Los Angeles street gang members are charged with kidnapping and robbing a man who testified in court that they were after a Shaquille O'Neal sex tape. So, I mean, again, this is, you know, this is a story. Los Angeles prosecutors said they have not verified the sex tape showing the retired basketball star having sex with several women, or whether or not it even actually exists. Alleged victim, who's Robert Ross, who said he was a member of the defendant's Main Street Mafia, Crips gang, before he became a music promoter, testified that apparently, I mean, this is some issues for Shaq right now. This is some issues for Shaq. I mean, again, it's all alleged at this point. Again, it's you know, it's all alleged stuff right now. And hopefully, Shaq has nothing to do with it. And you know, hopefully everything will work out for Shaquille O'Neal. But you know, prosecutors are saying that Shaq is not involved in the case. Shaq is not involved in the case at this point. So, I mean, that's a good thing for Shaq, ultimately. But, I mean, you know, it's never a good thing when these things come out. But, again, that's what's out there. Apparently there is a sex tape floating around with Shaquille O'Neal getting busy with several different women, I guess having a good old time. And, again, we'll see what happens with this story. But, again, as of right now, Shaquille O'Neal is not involved in the case. He is not involved. He is not involved. So, I mean, we'll see what happens with this story, how it continues. But as of right now, let me reiterate it. Prosecutors have said that Shaquille O'Neal is not involved. But Shaq has a sex tape out now. Must be good times, I guess.
God bless you.
And we
I don't know how many more times you can say it. How many more times do you want to say it? So we have heard this man has a you know, a sex tape out there, and we're well aware as you continue.
And I'm not saying, you know, and this also goes back to whether, you know, athletes and people who cheat. Number one, I'm not saying Shaq was married or what have you at the time, but the reality is this: no text messaging, no voicemails, and no sex tapes. You know, you're really, when you do one of those three things, you're really opening yourself up with, you're opening yourself up with to some things happening. Put it that
unless
way.
You want, I mean,
don't do those types of things.
Unless you want to be caught. My belief would be, listen, I mean, if I'm Shaquille O'Neal, what do I care? I mean, really. You think he's going to have a hard time finding another wife, Paul?
Probably not, no.
Okay. So what do you care? I mean, listen, here's the thing, though. Don't think it won't happen to you is my point. It's going to happen more to you than it's going to happen to anybody else. So don't then be dumb. Don't be stupid. Don't do it and regret it, because it's happening to you before it happens to anybody else. Period, point blank. It's happening to you before it happens to anybody else. So go into that room, you know, with your camera wand waving, because you know, make sure if it's gonna happen to you, you're prepared. But by the same token, don't wonder why. Don't cry, if you will, over spilled milk.
Well, yeah. It's, you know, it's a situation again. First off, if you're married, you know, stay true to your vows. But, you know, I mean, be smart about what you do. Be smart about, you know, the things that you're doing, because, again, they could come back to bite you in the butt, especially if you have it on videotape, and especially if you have it in a text message, especially if you have it in a voicemail. I mean, be careful what you do. And as always, we like to give out that public service announcement to anybody that may be listening. Watch what you do, watch what you say, watch what you write, please. And watch what you videotape, too.
Yeah, most importantly. Most importantly. No, I mean, it's a fickle time here, Paul. I mean, it's you talked about Shaq and his unfortunate, I guess you'll use the word escapade. But a lot of these athletes now, with the foray, the crossover, if you will, into the world of multimedia. It used to be you were an athlete, or it used to be that you were a celebrity. Now they're all called entertainers. And to stay relevant, to see how low some of these people are going, to me it's comical. That's why I bring up the point of it being a business. More and more every day, Jeremy is becoming the cynical, the cynical figurehead of this show, of my family. You know, teaching the young ones that, you know, to watch LeBron James hit that basketball and to watch David Copperfield make that bunny rabbit disappear, to me, you're seeing the same thing. There's too much money involved in too many of these activities at too many different levels for it to all be relevant, and all of it now to be for what they call and they sell you on, the love of the game. The love of this game is the game is money. And then you're playing for money. So if the dads and the mom coming up on Father's Day weekend, maybe my PSA, Paul, you just had yours, my PSA to the dads and maybe the soccer moms and the coaching dads is coach money. I mean, if you're going to coach your kid, you make sure they understand. Don't put your kid, if your kid likes, volleyball or badminton, listen, soccer is a big money sport abroad. So get your kid on that soccer ball and mixed martial arts is coming up, so start hitting your kid with rocks. Throw rocks at him. Keep him tough, and make sure they understand that they have to be in a sport that is making money. You have to be in a sport where there's viewership. Get him in a race car, Paul. I know you may not see that. Get him in a race car. NASCAR is there's big bucks to be had in NASCAR, and big bucks to drive around in a circle. I mean, you're looking at the highest paid, some of the highest paid athletes in all of professional sports. Basically, spend a couple of hours a week driving, literally driving in a circle. Which, if you thought that if someone could tell me I'm going to make billions driving in a circle, or if someone told me that the highest paid athlete in the world is going to hit a little white ball, I would have said go figure. And now if somebody would have told me the fastest growing sport is watching two people in a cage act like animals, I would have said that we're watching cockfighting. I mean, we're banning dog fighting, but we're promoting people fighting.
There's some hypocrisy in everything that we do in life. I mean, there's some hypocrisy within yourself and what you are. I mean, you may represent or stand for one thing, but you'll end up doing another, and that's what I think we all do. We teach our kids not to lie, but guess what? They're going to lie. They're going to lie. So, I mean, it's life. So it is what it is, and, it is what it is. How about you all go for it?
Hello?
Hello, Noah. How are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. How are you doing?
Pretty good. We're joined by one of the stars of Bad Teacher, which will be in theaters June 24th, Mr. Noah Dahl. Noah, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great today. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. And it's got to be great to be Noah Dahl right now. I mean, right now, Noah, Bad Teacher, it's going to be in theaters June 24th. Talk about your role in this movie.
Well, I have a couple scenes, a couple with Cameron Diaz and with the other kids. I'm one of her students. And it's some of the last days in school, and she's being mean to all the kids.
And do you like when your teacher is mean to you?
Do I like when my teachers are mean to me? In real life or on set?
Well, you know what, both.
Well, let's see, I'm homeschooled, so my mom's my teacher, and she can be evil sometimes. But she's awesome. And on set, it was really fun to work with all of them. The entire cast is just incredible.
Right. And Noah, I mean, Cameron Diaz is one of your teachers. What would you do if Cameron Diaz was your teacher in real life?
That would be a fun classroom.
Tell us why.
Well, considering she has the background of an actress, I don't think she would make us do that much schoolwork, because in homeschool, you don't really have that much busy work.
Right. And Noah, I mean, you talked about being homeschooled. How do you balance school, balance being a kid, and also being an actor? I mean, how do you balance all those things?
Well, you try to catch up and do school while there aren't auditions. And then when there are the auditions, you just plug away at acting.
And so during that time, I mean, you got to be tired at times. You're only 13 years old. I mean, does it get difficult?
At times it can, but it's really rewarding and fun.
Right.
Take a guy like me who's got two young kids, certainly looking to make an extra buck because it's hard out here. How do you go from being Noah Dahl to being Noah Dahl now, the super movie star?
Well, you just kind of have to plug away and not give up.
And is there times where you wanted to give up during this process? I mean, again, you're only 13 years old. I mean, is there times where you say, man, I just want to go play?
There are those times when I just want to go play, but then getting to meet, like, Cameron Diaz and Justin Timberlake and all them, that's the fun part.
We're talking to Noah Dahl,
one
of the actors and one of the stars of Bad Teacher, which will be in theaters June 24th. Make sure you check it out. Jeremy, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, you've been in a couple of bigger movies throughout your career. You were in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And that's why I say it's interesting, you know, you're at 13 years old and you mentioned being homeschooled. It's got to be, I think, very different for you, your experiences of, you know, certainly trying to continue on with your education, but in the middle of that, these roles probably are constantly coming up and having to decide, you know, hey, if I go out and get casted for this movie, it's gonna totally change things. How do you stay grounded and stay centered and really stay focused on managing all of these demands?
Well, for being well-rounded, I have a really good family base to help me with that, and I do extreme sports, and I'm a black belt in martial arts, so I do other things.
Wow.
And, go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right. And that just, you have to pick and choose movies, like saying, if I do this, this is a sure thing, but I might want to go take my chances doing something else.
Right. And we're talking to Noah Dahl, one of the stars of Bad Teacher. Bad Teacher is in theaters June 24th. Make sure you check it out. Noah, how'd you start acting?
Well, my parents are teachers, and a long time ago, the show Picket Fences, one of their students was in that show, Adam Wiley. And
okay.
He got me started with his manager, and I've enjoyed it ever since.
And definitely is a labor of love for you, and that's always a good thing. I mean, you know, you're a young kid now, but you want to make sure you find something you enjoy so it won't feel like work. And obviously this acting thing is a good thing for you. Now, how'd you go about getting casted for this movie?
Well, I originally went in for a one role, and they said that I was too young, I wasn't right for the part, and so they wrote in a different part for me.
And that's a good thing. I mean, ultimately you were able to get the role, and you found out that you were getting this role. How excited were you?
Well, I had like 105 fever when I found out. And I was really excited when I found out.
And Noah, right now I hear you have something in the works with Nickelodeon. Tell us about that.
Well, let's see, the Nickelodeon. It's Disney. I am up for
Disney, okay.
A pilot coming out. That's
okay.
Pretty much all I can say right now.
All right.
I just booked a different movie, and I just finished filming that. It's called
okay.
Samaritan. It should be out next year or so.
All right. So right now, Noah, you're 13 years old. Where does Noah Dahl, the actor, see himself in 5 years?
Let's see. Me in 5 years at 18, driving a really fast car.
Wow.
And I fly planes also, and probably getting my pilot license at 18, and just doing movies.
You're an ambitious young man, and that's a great thing. I mean, that's a great thing. You, like you said, I mean, you're flying planes. I mean, that's incredible.
Yes, it is. I love flying planes.
What other hobbies do you have, Noah?
Scuba diving, dirt biking, music, snowboarding, water skiing. And something called parkour.
Okay.
It's really demanding on your body, but it's amazing fun.
And it sounds like it. Noah, we wish you nothing but the best of luck with Bad Teacher. Remember, make sure you check it out, Bad Teacher, in theaters June 24th. Let me clear that up. June 24th, it's in theaters. Noah Dahl, one of the stars of it. Noah, nothing but the best of luck with the movie, sir, and your career. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Take care of yourself.
I'll see you guys later. All right.
All right. Noah Dahl, one of the stars of Bad Teacher, and that's in theaters June 24th. We're actually now being joined by Lakers forward Matt. Matt, how are you, sir?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing well. It's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And Matt, I want to start with the NBA Finals right now. The Mavericks, they beat the Heat in six. And what some consider a surprise, I wasn't surprised, but some consider it a surprise. Were you surprised at what you saw in that series?
I didn't necessarily watch the series. I knew that Dallas had a strong team. You know, they proved it throughout the Western Conference playoffs, and I definitely feel they weren't intimidated. You know, I think some people thought Miami may intimidate them, but you know, after beating us down and going through a tough series in Oklahoma, they were definitely ready for the finals, and they came out and took it.
And Matt, you played and defeated Dirk Nowitzki and the Mavs with the Golden State Warriors back in 2007. Talk about how different of a player Dirk is now in comparison to 2007.
Dirk is a great player. You know, I definitely feel he's probably solidified himself in probably the top five, players in the league right now, and, a future Hall of Famer. He's got a complete game. A seven-foot guy that plays like a guard, can get his shot off on anybody, and, really knows how to utilize his mismatches.
And he definitely did that in this series. And right now, LeBron James, he's catching a lot of heat for his play and how he played in this series. Do you think the criticism is fair?
I think it kind of comes with the territory. You know, I kind of feel the media is a fault to blame because they're the one blowing him up and saying he's this and he's that and he's the next greatest. And then, he plays well and he's a bum, in most people's eyes. So, it's a tough territory to be in. LeBron's still a very young player, and he will be great. He's on his way to being great, and I'm sure, next year he'll come out with a vengeance.
And Matt, that was similar to what you guys just incurred, which was, you had a tough series against a great Mavs team, and you right away, right after the series, it was, Kobe may be done, and are they going to blow up the Lakers, and, what's to be of this team? Was that fair? I mean, for me, the media to look at the Lakers and say this was a totally lost season.
That's the media's job, is to really stir up controversy, and in LA they do a great job of that. Anything less than a championship in that organization is considered a failure. Which is very high standards, but it's great to be a part of. you know,
right.
we just didn't have it. No excuses. You know, they were the better team that series, but I definitely feel that we still have a championship quality team, and we're going to be back next year to prove that.
And Matt, I want to go back to that Mavs series for a second. I look at that series, and I was saying earlier in the show, you guys could have been up 2-1 after those first three games. When you look back at that series, do you kind of feel like you let one get away?
You know, we let a few games get away. You know, taking leads in the fourth quarter with our team, you know, usually means a victory. But we couldn't close the game out. And then in the playoffs, in the regular season, you may be able to get away with that. But in the playoffs, you can't. You need to play for 48 minutes. And we didn't do that. You know, and Dallas did a great job of capitalizing on our mistakes and closing games out.
We're talking to Matt Barnes, forward for the Los Angeles Lakers. And, Matt, 2010 was a tough year for you in terms of injuries. You missed 29 games with your knee injury. How frustrating was that for you?
It was very frustrating, you know, to finally be on a team that has a chance to win a championship and, you know, really excited to be a part of that. And then basically after my knee injury in January, my season was over. You know, I came back later in the season, but I wasn't the same by any means. You know, I couldn't jump. I really couldn't move laterally. And in the playoffs, I really didn't get to play, which was, you know, no knock to the coaching staff. You have to go with who's healthy and who can play. And, you know, I just wasn't at that point. And I really think that was the hardest thing of my career, to sit back and just watch my team and not be able to help.
Right. And that is definitely a tough thing. And, Matt, one thing I noticed about you in your game, you're a tough, feisty, hard-nosed defensive player. I remember you going back and forth with Kobe a couple of years back. But do you try to get into the head of your opponents by some of the things that you do?
Not necessarily try to get in their head. I just try to play them hard. I mean, I know every night I'm going to be matched up with the best player on the other team usually. And, you know, I just got to go out there and play hard. You know, I'm not looking to fight anybody or mix it up or do anything like that, but I definitely don't shy away from that. You know, if someone's going to throw an elbow or try to play physical, I love that. I'd invite that. You know, I kind of play with a football mentality. I grew up playing football, so contact is something I enjoy. But, you know, for the most part, I just try to go out there and play as hard as I possibly can and make the best player earn every point he gets.
So with this offseason and your injury, to a certain degree, are you now at 100%, or are you going to use this time in the offseason to, you know, to get even healthier?
Yeah, that's the plan. No, actually, right now I'm not. Actually, right now I'm still, you know, I kind of took steps back after the season. They put me on a program where I'm not supposed to run for about 6 weeks, so I'm not yet running. Right now I'm just rehabbing and strengthening my knee. So I'd probably say I'm about 80%, but, you know, just more time, which, you know, unfortunately, if we do happen to have a lockout, it may possibly benefit me.
Right. We're talking to Matt Barnes, Lakers forward. And Matt, your new coach now is Mike Brown. He's a guy who loves defense. And, again, defense is your calling card. How excited are you to play for Coach Brown?
You know, it's just a great opportunity. You know, after, you know, Phil retiring, you know, and taking his legacy, you know, it's time to start a new one, you know, for our team. And, you know, I think I speak for the team. We're excited to get back to work to get that bitter taste out of our mouth. And like you said, Mike is definitely attention to details on the defensive end, and I think that's going to, you know, challenge us, and I think that's what we need.
Definitely. And you look at it, you talked about the lockout, and you talked about how it may be a benefit for you, but do you see this thing going a long time? I mean, do you see where games will be missed?
I hope not. I really feel, and, you know, statistics have supported that the NBA is at an all-time high right now as far as, you know, TV ratings and fan participation and what the fans are getting right now. So I hope that we don't take steps back and go through a lockout. You know, as a player, we definitely want to get back out there and play and, you know, give the fans something to do. So we understand it's a business. You know, hopefully the football lockout may, you know, ease our way through it. And, you know, with some of the stuff they're going through, may eliminate some of the stuff we have to go through. But, you know, as it looks, we may do it, but it's a part of the business.
Well, you brought up an interesting point, which is the NFL lockout. Do you think that, you know, the fact that the NFL lockout is going on this long, will that help the players in the NBA, their bargaining power, against the ownership?
I hope so. You know, it's kind of like a so-called, you know, a test dummy almost. You know what I mean? That's no disrespect to the NFL, but just to kind of see what they're going through and, you know, see what the players are missing and seeing back and forth and now ruling going to the Supreme Court and stuff like that. So I hope we get a chance to learn from that and not really have to stretch ours out if we happen to go into a lockout.
Yeah, and like you said, Matt, and you said it correctly. I mean, the NBA it's on a high right now, and I'm a big NBA guy, and I would hate to see a lockout. It would really just put a damper on all that you guys have done in this, during this season. So I mean, let's get it done. Hopefully, it will get done.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Matt, I gotta ask your wife Gloria. She's been on Basketball Wives the past 2 years. You've kind of been outspoken against the show. At this point, are you okay with Gloria appearing on the show?
You know, I support Gloria, you know, in what she does, and she's using that as a stepping stone, a stepping tool to what she wants to do. You know, she wants to act, and she's been doing acting classes and auditions and commercials and stuff like that, and she used that show to get what she wanted to be. The problem I just have is, you know, with the so-called Basketball Wives name, with none of these women really being in relationships, I really just feel they're giving the whole situation a bad look. These women are out there, you know, fighting, screaming, you know, sleeping around and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And it kind of reflects, you know, once you put that basketball title on it, so, you know, it's almost like we're a family. So it reflects badly on all of us. So that was the only real problem I had with it.
And Basketball Wives don't act like this, right, Matt?
No, those girls aren't. Those girls on the show aren't wives, and I don't even really know what they are. So, you know, real women don't act like that, should I say.
Let me rephrase that. Basketball baby mamas don't act like that, Matt.
And is that, like, is it difficult then for you, and certainly your wife who's trying to break into acting, for this to have to unfortunately be, her comparators, people that really are, they're just trying to, you know, they're trying to steal whatever they can, albeit money, and now certainly, albeit, you know, fame and fortune from whomever.
Yeah, that's what I feel. I mean, just to get through to, you know, the people to utilize, you know, a stepping stone. You know, reality TV is so big right now, but, you know, most of the people just take the fame and the red carpet and the little piece of change they give them and leave it at that. But to really utilize it, you know, the reality TV is such a big thing now that the whole world sees you. So use that as a stepping stone. You know, use the TV show like they're trying to use you and exploit you. Use that airtime that you're on there to, you know, really let the world know what you're about and what you're trying to get accomplished and, you know, really come out and make money through it.
We're talking to Matt Barnes, forward for the Los Angeles Lakers. And, Matt, on this show, we like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better.
Okay.
You ready to play?
Yeah.
Better basketball city, Orlando or Philadelphia?
Orlando.
Better than Philadelphia, Matt?
Philadelphia crowd. I played in both, and Philadelphia is a tough crowd. Sometimes the crowd doesn't show up, you know, so I think those are really two negatives. You know, when you're tough and you boo, when you throw stuff at your own team, you know, that kind of knocks you down in my book. And Orlando is a very supportive community and, you know, great fan support.
Better Superman, Shaq or Dwight Howard?
Oh, man, you're trying to get me in trouble with this one. you know, I kind of think it goes both ways. You know, Shaq was the original Superman, and, you know, I think he should take it as, you know, Dwight looked up to him and, you know, wanted to be another Superman. You know, I think Shaq in his prime was one of the greatest players ever, and Dwight in his prime had the chance to do the same thing. So, you know, I kind of think they're both good Supermans.
And this should be an easy one for you, Matt. Better basketball wife, Shawnee O'Neal or Gloria?
Oh, my God. I didn't even consider Shawnee a basketball wife. Gloria all the way.
Better tattoos, Birdman Chris Anderson or Matt Barnes?
Man, I haven't really got a chance to stare at his, but he has his in wild, you know, just more than me in the neck tattoos and all that stuff. I'd have to give a nod to him because, you know, he did a few things I would never do.
Now, Matt, you do a lot of work in the community. So tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I have a foundation called Athletes First Cancer, which I started in 2008. I lost my mom in 2007. I started my foundation in 2008. And my foundation is to raise awareness and preventative screening. So what my foundation does is we raise money and we buy mobile screening units. And we actually have the first one coming up. First screening that we're actually going to do is going to be July 23rd. And it's going to be a whole health fair. So what we do is we just, you know, go to a park and basically set up a health fair and have free screening for all the different cancers, blood pressure, asthma, you know, anything you can possibly have, we're going to have something there to screen it and just to make sure you're healthy. You know, we're going to have a barbecue and something for the kids to do to just really go out and have a good time. But, you know, after losing my mom in such a drastic manner, you know, it really just woke me up and, you know, realized that, you know, these diseases attack everybody. And, you know, if I can use my celebrity to come out and save lives, I will definitely do that.
And where can we find information about this?
AthletesFirstCancer.com. You'll find all the information. We're actually doing a celebrity tournament August 12th at Trump National in Palos Verdes. And that'll be, you know, a load of celebrities, and we'll have kids out from the hospital come have a good time. So we're looking just to raise money and keep giving back.
Matt, we wish you nothing but the best of luck going forward, nothing but the best of luck with your work with cancer. Man, get healthy and have a great 2011 season.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, fellas.
Take care.
All right.
Matt Barnes, forward for the Los Angeles Lakers, and I tried to get Matt in trouble, but Matt was so ever the politician and so ever the beautiful speaker he was, and it got around it. But, but I mean, it was a pleasure talking to Matt, and Matt's a feisty, hard-working type of player, and you like to see guys like him do well in the NBA. And it's about that time now, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a few minutes left in the show. And each and every time around this time, somebody has to do something stupid, somebody has to act stupid, and somebody has to be stupid. And so we call that you stupid. And so I got to nominate somebody, and I got a nomination right now. And I'm going to nominate the Vancouver fans, the fans of the Vancouver Canucks, who their team, which lost in Game 7 to the Boston Bruins, their fans afterwards were rioting and throwing stuff and acting a fool pretty much and just doing stupid stuff. I mean, yes, you know, life is life and hockey is hockey, but guess what? It is hockey, ladies and gentlemen. It's a hockey game. It's not real. It's a hockey game. It's a hockey game. Now, you know, if you're going to riot, riot for something that's legit. I mean, you can understand the Los Angeles riots with the Rodney King situation. They had a legitimate cause to riot. They had a reason. Now, some may disagree or agree with the reason that they had, but they had a legitimate reason. Your reason, Vancouver fans, your reason for throwing stuff and knocking cars over and putting things on fire, your reason is because your team lost in the Stanley Cup Finals. Things that make you say, That's dumb. That's ridiculous. That's crazy. That's cowardice. That's asinine. Why would you mess up your city because your team lost in the Stanley Cup Finals? Because your team lost in a hockey game. It ain't real. It's real, I guess, the people were making money and everything else, but it ain't real at the end of the day. That's dumb. That's asinine. That's ridiculous. That's cowardice. That's crazy. The fans of Vancouver, and the ones who are rioting, I don't want to say everybody, but the ones who are rioting, you're stupid.
No, it was a good one, Paul. And mine is a simpler one, but it delivers the same message I think you and I always look at, and then that is former Congressman Wiener. I mean, to me, to be as dumb, to be at that level, and we always say, no texting, certainly no sexting, no videos. I mean, but to be out there on Facebook, you know, to be tweeting these things. I mean, I pray for him because he certainly needs help. You can think it. I mean, you can do it. And that's coming from, I'm saying you can do this stuff, but do not be out there updating your Facebook page talking about you're a part of your anatomy as your last name, especially when your last name is Wiener. I mean, that's hard for me to understand. You know, I respect the last name, but when your last name is Wiener, I mean, the only thing you need to joke about is Oscar Mayer. Other than that, man, you are stupid.
There you have it. There you have it. There you have it. the individuals we nominated for You Stupid this week. We got a 20 seconds real quickly. Want to thank Matt Barnes for stopping by and talking about some of the things that's going on with him during this offseason. Make sure you check it out, athletesversuscancer.com. Also, I want to thank Ken Hamblin for stopping by. Greatly appreciated. Make sure you support his foundation and make sure you follow some of the things he's doing. Also, we want to thank Noah Dahl from the great movie Bad Teacher, which is in theaters June 24th. Make sure you check that out. And also, last but not least, we want to thank Matt Smith from Well Wars, which airs on Animal Planet each and every Friday at 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this great show and other great shows. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. For Jeremy Yespe, this is Paul Gant. Have a great afternoon. See you later. Bye.